It's Jim, it's the World of Bonds. It's Monday the 22nd of April 2024. This is for professional investors only and never ever investment advice. I've called this episode the Tortured Bond Investors Department. You might think this is a cynical attempt to get some random hits from people on Spotify looking for the hot new Taylor Swift album that dropped at the end of last week with a similar name to that. But that's just your warped minds. It's simply a title to reflect the turbulent past couple of years of inflation-induced bond market sell-offs. Let's start by welcoming my new Taylor Swift fans, or Swifties as I'm going to call them, by setting the scene. I'm looking at a chart now by the excellent Torsten Schlock, one of my favourite economists. Swifties, an economist, is a kind of highly paid fortune teller. Anyway, he shows where US year-on-year CPI inflation would end up 2024 based on various monthly prints on the CPI numbers, so the month-on-month numbers. Excuse me, remember, the last 3 months average out at 0.4% month-on-month rate, the last 6 months at 0.3%. So in the former case, if we stay at this really hot level of inflation on month-on-month basis, we would end up December at around 4.5% headline inflation rate. So a re-acceleration in the year-on-year inflation rate that would be quite significant, heading up towards 5, really. Only if month-on-month increases in CPI fall to 0.1% and average that for the remainder of the year do we hit the 2% level by the year end. Remember, 2% is the general level that central banks look at targeting. It's a slightly different measure than CPI that the Fed looks at, but let's call it 2% by year end. I do, though, think that if we got 0.2 month-on-month numbers for the rest of the year, we'd get back down towards 3% by year end. And I think that would be enough for the Fed to be cutting at that point or before that point, because they wouldn't need to go all the way back to average, as we've talked about ad nauseum, but they'd cut from a very tight monetary policy stance to a merely tight monetary policy stance. So we do need to be seeing 0.2s rather than 0.3s and 0.4s for the remainder of this year. I for one will be rooting for the anti-hero and hoping that we do start seeing some 0.1s and 0.2s. Now, I promised last week that I'd look at Ben Bernanke versus the Bank of England. Remember that post the pandemic inflation boom, after we've seen that for a couple of years, the bank got the former Fed chair, Ben Bernanke, in to ask really what went wrong. Why did the bank expect inflation to be transitory? It did go all the way up to 11%, which was a 40-year high on inflation. I mean, you could argue it is vaguely transitory in that it did come back down again, but it has stayed well above target and for longer than people expected. So there is some truth in the transitory stuff, but nevertheless, I think most people would say that the Bank of England's forecasts were not very accurate over the period of this post-pandemic inflation blip, based on supply disruptions and wealth effects and all of those good things that we've talked about. Well, Ben Bernanke pulled no punches whatsoever. I mean, the Financial Times described his conclusions as brutal. The Guardian described them as devastating. So the Bernanke made 12 recommendations. I won't go through all 12 of them here, but they ranged from the kind of mundane, which is buy some up-to-date computer software. I do presume they're no longer using Lotus 123, which is what I had to work with when I was at the bank. But nevertheless, there may well be some more modern stuff than that out there, and that the bank should buy it. More interestingly, he thinks that the famous fan charts, which have been in the inflation report for decades and decades now, really since Bank of England was made independent and before that even, that they should be ditched as they are not particularly useful. You might think that they do show, and one of the things we'll come and talk about, he said we should have some scenarios in the Bank of England's forecast. And you might think that the fan charts do give a range of probabilities and uncertainties that ought to be quite useful. You know, nobody, I don't think you should dispute the idea that when we're thinking, and this is one of the learnings of behavioral economics, when you ask people for something and you ask them to be 95% sure of that, they still come up with outcomes in their guesses for things that are way too precise and are wrong, way outside the bounds of probability. And the fan charts acknowledges that there's a big range of outcomes that are possible, but Bernanke just thinks that they're not useful. And one thing that he thought was particularly not useful about it was that the forecasts that the Bank of England produce for inflation are based on market rate expectations. So you look at the short sterling strip or short dated rate expectations, the sort of stuff that comes out of WIRP that I know you all love here. You feed those in and then you get the inflation forecasts out. So explicitly the bank's inflation forecasts are based on market rate forecasts. And Bernanke says that doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, what happens if why are you putting these out if the bank's own expectations of rates over the foreseeable future are very different from the market's expectations? Why don't you use the bank's own expectations? And the kind of path that leads you down is to come out with thinking, well, maybe the Bank of England should come up with a kind of FOMC style dot plot where MPC members would say, I think short term, 6 months out, 3 months out, 2 years out, long term, you'll come out with a dot to explain where you think your Bank of England rate will be. He didn't go that far. He didn't propose that a dot plot was the way forwards. And I think there's a bit of pushback on the FOMC dot plot, even for Fed followers, that perhaps it's not all that useful. But Bernanke was in favour of more scenarios being shown. For instance, you could say, well, if there are these kind of shocks to the economy, then this is what might happen to inflation and so forth. So interesting, a lot more critical than many people had expected. I think people have pointed out that maybe the bank's inflation post-pandemic experience has been poorer in terms of forecasting than other places, but nevertheless, pretty much everyone got this wrong. So I've got a bit of sympathy for the bank on this one. Remember, the UK has historically had this slightly asymmetric and stickier inflation problem than other places. Maybe we hadn't got rid of it after all. But Governor Bailey did get another critical panning, really, in Liz Truss's lunch with the FT on Sunday. And this is where the FT takes people out for lunch somewhere, and they get to choose where. Liz Truss chose somewhere near Norwich, I think, and they had carrot soup and talked about the world, some Sauvignon Blanc. Remember, that's Liz Truss's favourite wine, according to gossipy political commentators. Anyway, that's what they had. And she said that she thought about sacking Andrew Bailey, but, quote, that would have caused a market crisis. Well, thank God we avoided that. But she very critical in this article, which is well worth reading, about the Office of Budgetary Responsibility, the Treasury, and pretty much all the people who, the deep state, including the FT, that brought her down on her short-lived reign as Prime Minister. So a final word to end today about the Bank of England. Gilts are outperforming today. So looking at two-year gilts, they're down 5 basis points at 4.33, whereas two-year Treasury is down 2, two-year Germany down 3. So we are doing better than other markets. And the reason for that is really a bit of a rally on the back of Friday's speech by Deputy Bank of England Governor Dave Ramsden. He talked about, quote, the balance of risks to the outlook for UK inflation have risen to the downside. This is since the February monetary policy report. So balance of risks have changed to the downside, heading back down to 2% here a bit later than other people, certainly later than Europeans, maybe not the US, where, as I say, there are a bit of a re-acceleration going on. But we're moving in the right direction now, and that opens the way for rate cuts. As a result of that, sterling, our currency, is having a rough month. So it's off about 4.25% against the US dollar since early March, and it's down pretty much against everything by some large amounts really now. Haters gonna hate. Have good weeks. Bye.